Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of Locked On Clippers. I'm your host, Lucas Han, and today is January 11th. It's Wednesday. Clippers are playing the Orlando Magic today, getting back in action after a couple days off. But before we dive in to sort of previewing that game, I have a hypothetical trade proposal that I want to talk about. I don't think it's very good. I think, for the record, Sacramento would actually say no. I think the Clippers might say yes. There's a few reasons why I don't think it's a great deal. Not my finest hypothetical work, if you will, but I want to just float ideas like this, you know, some crazy stuff like this, because I'm having a hard time coming up with trades that I think are decent. And a lot of times, you know, I'll come up with some trade or some free agent the Clippers should sign that I think is great. And you always hear critics from both sides. People who, from the other team's fan base who think that they're not getting enough. Clippers fans who think that we're not getting enough. You know, that's just going to happen anytime you have people with opinions on a wide spectrum. But I'm having a hard time seeing something this year that even passes my standards. I'm not able to come up with a trade for myself that I think is realistic. So I'm hoping that by kicking the ball on some of this stuff, hearing back from you guys in emails on Twitter, I'll be able to come up with some better ideas, maybe give us something a little more substantial to talk about in the trade rumor department. So my trade that I put out on Twitter today, Jamal Crawford, Wesley Johnson, and Bryce Johnson to the Sacramento Kings for Rudy Gay, Matt Barnes, and Omri Caspi. Now, like I said, I don't think that this is like a realistic trade or a good, you know, I think especially Sacramento would be saying no. But there's a few reasons why I think it's compelling, if not realistic, and maybe something that just sort of as a thought exercise can help us get closer to a realistic trade proposal. So, you have to look, if you're thinking about trading Jamal Crawford, you've got to look at teams that would want him. So not teams that are going to be huge on the efficiency movement, but teams that need help creating some offense, teams that are looking for a name. I know the Knicks are a team that people throw out a lot. You know, it's hard because you never know really what a team's front office is valuing if you're not in the room. But it seems like Sacramento, with their weakness creating offense from those guard positions, it could be feasible that they'd be interested in Crawford. Wesley Johnson, you know, he is what he is. He's a decent wing on a decent contract for a couple more years. And Bryce Johnson's a young prospect. Now, from the Kings' perspective, Rudy Gay is a guy who's probably going to leave this summer. Matt Barnes is a guy who is underperforming expectations and they aren't super happy with how he's played. Omri Caspi has found himself in the doghouse barely playing after having a great year last year. So these are guys who, in theory, it might not hurt Sacramento too much to part with. Jamal Crawford, Wesley Johnson, Bryce Johnson all have contracts past this season, so they're trading a guy who they're not happy with in Matt Barnes and two guys who are leaving in July anyway in Rudy Gay and Omri Caspi for three guys who are going to be on the team going into next year and then potentially going into the year after that, all three of them could still be on the team. Now, the reason that they say no is because Rudy Gay is their second best player and they're trying to make a playoff push. And Jamal Crawford, Wesley Johnson, and Bryce Johnson aren't that good. They're good. They're fine. But we've talked plenty in the last two episodes about how Jamal has been this year versus in past years, how he's dropping off, how he's aging, how his contract could be a problem. And Wesley Johnson has been, you know, if we said that he was mediocre last year, he's been worse than that this year. And Bryce Johnson, sure, he's a promising young player, but he hasn't even played a game yet because of a herniated disc in his lower back. So it's not like any of these pieces have amazing value for what they could bring to the table. And then from the Clippers' perspective, if you throw in the first round pick to sweeten the deal, it still might not be enough for Sacramento. And I keep coming back to this. It really hurts for the Clippers to be giving up another future first round pick, especially, you know, double-sided coin. If you trade for Rudy Gay, he might leave the next summer. And then you traded a first-round pick for 30 games of an average, inconsistent small forward. Now, that's what they did with Jeff Green last year, too. And I want to talk a little bit about the Jeff Green trade in the second half of the episode once we get into the Orlando preview. But so I posted that trade on Twitter, that hypothetical trade. I posted it with a poll. So Crawford, Wesley Johnson, Bryce Johnson for Rudy Gay, Matt Barnes, and Omri Caspi. 25% said that it's a good deal for both teams. 11% said it's a bad deal for both teams. 18% said the Clippers would say no. And 46% said the Kings would say no. Now, consider the audience. The audience is Clippers fans. It's from the Clips Nation Twitter account. And it didn't get, you know, it only got one retweet from a Clippers fan, so it's not like it got tweeted around the internet and got a diverse response space. If Clippers fans think that it's an unfair trade for the Kings, that the Kings are getting ripped off, and Clippers fans, obviously any fan base tends to overvalue their own players, that's a sign that it's a one-sided trade. And I tweeted immediately afterwards that the answer should be bad for Kings. That's what I would answer to this poll, is that it's a bad trade for the Kings. So it's not surprising to me, but I wanted to get the ball rolling and kind of hopefully start a conversation. And so just moving on from that, I want to get a little more into the Clippers matchup tonight with Orlando. They practiced yesterday. They're back in action after 2 days off. And SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to find tickets for tonight's game and for the games that you want to see this season. There's nothing like being at the game for the biggest plays of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the seats you want for great value. SeatGeek has the best deals on every ticket in the house, wherever you want to sit, whether that's courtside, the club seats, or the upper level. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for this weekend or any game this season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee. Best of all is that my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, and click Add a Promo Code. Enter promo code LOCLIPPERS, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LOCLIPPERS today. So, moving on into the Clippers game against Orlando tonight. Even though Orlando isn't a great team, I actually think that this is a really interesting matchup for the Clippers as they're currently constructed without Blake Griffin, because one of Orlando's shortcomings is their roster composition. They have a lot of front court players. You know, they already had Nikola Vucevic. They had Aaron Gordon, and they went out. They traded Victor Oladipo, who's a backcourt player, a wing player, for Serge Ibaka. And they gave big contracts to Bismack Biyombo and Jeff Green. So they really loaded up on guys who are probably better at the four at the four or five position. And you get put in a tough spot when, you know, Nikola Vucevic is maybe the best player of any of the guys I just named. And he's coming off the bench because of the amount of money that they gave to Bismack Biyombo. Serge Ibaka is a good power forward, but he's kind of blocking Aaron Gordon, who's a 21-year-old that they picked fourth overall a couple of years ago. Aaron Gordon is being forced to play at small forward, which isn't his natural position, and he's competing for minutes there with Jeff Green, who they gave $15 million to this summer. So it's kind of, you know, really a cluster there. It's just a mess. And I think part of the reason why their offense is so poor, they're 27th in the NBA in offensive rating, is because they don't have the level of perimeter scoring that they need with, you know, Elfrid Payton isn't a great perimeter scorer, and he's their point guard. And Aaron Gordon at small forward is really more of a combo forward who should be playing like a small ball four. So it's all on Evan Fournier, and I really like Evan Fournier, but I don't like him as your number one option, and I think Orlando being 16-23 shows why. I think it's kind of a testament to that. Now, what's interesting to me about this matchup is that the Clippers got toasted by this big Orlando matchup the last time these two teams played. They won the game, but it was a way, way closer game than you would like it to be. And Aaron Gordon had 33 points, which is a career high. He only averages 11 a game, and he had 33 in that game against the Clippers. Now, here's what's interesting. So we've talked in the last week a lot about how the Clippers' three-guard lineup that they've been going to in Blake Griffin's absence, bumping Mbah Mute to the power forward position, works, but only in certain situations. Because if you're going up against a prolific scorer at small forward, or a big, strong small forward who's going to overwhelm a 6'4 combo guard like Austin Rivers, then you're going to have trouble. You're going to have trouble defending him. Now, you might say, well, Aaron Gordon had 33 points the last time they played, so obviously, you know, what's he going to do, have 50 this time? Well, the problem is Austin Rivers actually got that matchup against Aaron Gordon last time. Luke Mbah-Mute missed that game with a shoulder injury. It wasn't a big deal. You might have even forgotten that Luke missed time with that shoulder injury. But in that game against the Orlando Magic, Austin Rivers was the starting small forward. The Clippers went three guard. And Aaron Gordon went off for 33 points. That's worrisome. That worries me that this small ball lineup that has been successful for the Clippers in the last four games could really be exposed. Because Aaron Gordon, I just don't, you know, Austin Rivers is a good defender, but that's a matchup he's going to lose on the defensive end of the court. And you just look up and down the roster. I don't know if this is everyone else's perception, but my perception has been the reason that Oklahoma City has always played the Clippers well in recent years is that they are, and I think it's the reason why they've been good in recent years too. It's not just against the Clippers. They are so athletic and so long and so tall that they stifle you on defense. They get a lot of deflections and forced turnovers, and they just rebound the hell out of the basketball because they're so much bigger than you. They have longer arms. They jump higher. And Orlando's starting to look like that. Now, Orlando's not as good as Oklahoma City, thankfully. Clearly, they're not as good as Oklahoma City. But there's an element to their team. They bring that dimension to the game in a way that most NBA teams don't. And the Clippers are playing a style of basketball right now that makes them more vulnerable to that kind of attack than they normally would be or a normal NBA team would be. Elfrid Payton is 4 inches taller than Chris Paul. Evan Fournier is 3 inches taller than J.J. Redick. Aaron Gordon is what, he's 5 inches taller than Austin Rivers. Serge Ibaka, I think, is 3 or 4 inches taller than Luke Mbah-Mute. The only position where they give up size and a rebounding advantage, just like Oklahoma City, is at center to DeAndre Jordan. But unless the basketball is going to DeAndre Jordan, Who do you think is more likely to get a rebound, Ibaka or Mbamute? It's Ibaka. Gordon or Rivers? It's Gordon. Fournier or Redick? It's Fournier. And Chris Paul might be scrappy, but Elfrid Payton still has 4 inches on him to go after offensive boards. That's a tough thing to overcome, and it's tough because when the Clippers try to run their offense and move the ball around, instead of passing around a 6'2 guy, Chris Paul is passing around a 6'4 guy. Longer wingspan. You know, just there's more limb in the passing lane. JJ Redick's playing against a 6'7 guy. Austin Rivers, I mean, imagine trying to inbound the ball or hold the ball in the wing and make an entry pass against a guy who's 5 inches longer than you and is a monster athlete like Aaron Gordon is. He just stifles you. There's nowhere where you can reach to throw the ball from that he's not going to be all over it. And that's something that I think is going to be an issue. And I know that this is what I've said in recent games, how you watch the Clippers' success with this three-guard lineup is based on two things: how well they do what they do well, and how well they make up for what they don't do well. The first being, how much of a boost do they get offensively from having a third guard on the floor? Austin Rivers, Jamal Crawford, Raymond Felton. Someone who, even though they're undersized, is going to help with creation, get in the lane, make the offense move. The latter part of that, how well can you get away with being small on defense? Aaron Gordon is a guy who, even though he's not a complete player at this point in his career, and I don't think he's a small forward either, he hurts you in both parts of that. So I think he's the X factor. Aaron Gordon can beat the Clippers tonight by really exposing that weakness in their lineup. Now, there's some connections in this game that are interesting. You know, a lot of people might not know this or might not be aware, but Doc Rivers' first head coaching gig was actually with the Orlando Magic. He was the coach of the year there in 2000. Him and Austin both have some serious Orlando roots. I get, and J.J. Redick was drafted by Orlando, and he played 6 and part of a 7th year there before being traded, and then eventually finding the Clippers and having, you know, the best seasons of his career with L.A. But I get calls from radio stations in Orlando, you know, because they want to talk about the Clippers, and it seems a little weird at first, but then you think there's such deep Orlando connections, you know, for the Los Angeles Clippers. And Brandon Bass was also there too. He played 2 or 3 years with the Magic. But what I really want to talk about are the two Orlando players who used to be Clippers, Jeff Green and CJ Wilcox. Because both of those players, I think, are going to be used in any attempt to make a case against Doc Rivers' performance as general manager of this basketball team. Now, the CJ Wilcox one is definitely more minor, but it's all Doc probably didn't botch it as badly either. So the Clippers drafted CJ Wilcox 28th. He stuck on the team in the 14-15 season and the 15-16 season. He didn't do anything. He was never able to earn serious playing time. He made some shots because he's, you know, he's a shooter, so it's okay that he made some shots, but he didn't really ever seem like he was going to be an NBA player. He didn't seem like he had it in him. He looked better than Reggie Bullock, but that's not saying much. So when the Clippers were building their roster this summer, one move that they made was to trade CJ Wilcox to the Orlando Magic for Devin Marble and a second round pick. Now, Devin Marble didn't have a guaranteed contract, so the Clippers cut him immediately, and they basically freed a roster spot because CJ had a guaranteed contract. So they freed that roster spot to sign Allen Anderson, and they got a future second round pick for giving up on CJ. Now, that's actually looking like a pretty decent move because CJ hasn't even been able to get on the floor for Orlando, and Orlando certainly could have used him if he was able to contribute. And, you know, the Clippers, they were able to put a guy, Allen Anderson, on the roster. Allen Anderson hasn't done much. It's not like that's been, you know, a huge victory for Doc as a general manager, but they got a future second-round pick. It's from Cleveland in 2020, so you know, I'm not sure how valuable it is, but they'll be able to take a shot. They'll be able to take a shot and nab a player in the second round. They got something for, you know, what they felt essentially was that CJ wasn't panning out, and so they got something that could have value someday for someone who they didn't value right now. But the fact that they used the first round pick on a guy who they were going to give up on in 2 years is what's really going to be held against Doc. Now, the more heinous one is Jeff Green. The Clippers, in what some would describe as a panic move, traded a future first round pick for Jeff Green at the trading deadline last year, 11 months ago. And I said at the time, you know, Jeff Green's a flawed player, but he did contribute. It's not like, oh, he could have contributed, but he didn't fit. He did contribute, and he wasn't great, but he was okay. And there were a few games where he helped, and there were a lot of games where he was kind of invisible. But the whole point was that the team took a gamble. They traded the future for someone who could potentially help them in that playoff run. And then when Chris Paul and Blake Griffin were both injured, the playoff run was dead. It didn't matter what Jeff Green did. That playoff run was dead without Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. Now, that's not necessarily Doc's fault, and it doesn't make the trade a bad trade. Or I should say, there are two ways to judge a trade. You can judge the trade when it's made based on value, and you can judge a trade down the line based on how it panned out. So, you know, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin getting injured doesn't change the value of the trade, but it does change the actual outcome, because if you traded for a guy to help you in a playoff run and then you ended up not having a playoff run, you traded for a guy for no reason. The other thing that I would have argued at the time is that the best thing about trading for Jeff Green was that they were getting his bird rights, which meant that they could sign him in the summer and basically add another contributor in a way that they wouldn't have otherwise been able to. You saw what, you know, the Clippers were kind of strapped for cash this summer. They weren't able to get the wing that they would have liked to get, and having Jeff Green's bird rights would have helped with that. But then they weren't able to re-sign him this summer either. So all around, everything where you'd hope that maybe giving up, you know, it would be worth it to give up that first round pick if Jeff Green really boosted their playoff run, but he never got a chance to. And it would be worth it to give, maybe it might be worth it to give up that first round pick if he'd re-signed this summer, but he didn't. So that's, you know, along with the whole Jared Dudley, Spencer Hawes thing, those are the big moves from the Doc Rivers as GM era that have not panned out. He swung and he missed. And it hurts to swing and miss like that. It does. It hurts the franchise in the short term and the long term. So it's not great. Yeah, I wanted to get into it. I wanted to talk about that trade a little bit, but it's not great. And that's why, going back, when we talk about, well, is it worth it to throw in a first-round pick in a Wesley Johnson, Tabo Cephalosha swap? No, I don't think it is. Because you're banking on, is Tabo Cephalosha going to make a huge boost to our playoff run this year? When, A, he might not get a chance to if players are hurt, and B, even if Chris and Blake are healthy, he might not make a huge impact as the ninth or tenth man. And C, even if he does make an impact, but the impact doesn't get the Clippers to a championship, is it worth winning an extra game in the second round? Is that worth a future second round pick, losing in six instead of five, or making it to the conference finals instead of losing in the second round? Is that worth another future first round pick? Probably not. So that's why the Jeff Green trade really makes me hesitant to move another future first. So the only other thing I think of note is that Austin Rivers, of course, has been playing very well lately. He had two really good games last week. He's had a good season overall. He's the number two three-point shooter on the Clippers at over 40%, which I think is something that even among those of us who have been huge supporters of Austin, I think seeing him above 40% from three at, you know, a relatively decent sample size, it's not like it's five games into the season, I think that's a surprise for everyone, a really pleasant surprise. But he missed Sunday's game with the flu, and it hurt the team to not have him on the court. It hurt their offense and it hurt their defense to have Raymond Felton out there instead of him. Not that Felton did anything wrong, but he doesn't bring the same dynamic to the team offensively that Austin does. And he doesn't bring the just, you know, frankly, when you're playing that small, any size you can get at small forward helps. And Felton's significantly smaller than Austin is. Now Raymond, you know, hopefully with Austin back, Raymond will be able to return to more of a backup point guard role, which is where he's better. But Austin isn't listed on the injury report, so we can only hope that he will be able to play tomorrow. I didn't see anything about if he participated in practice today, but I think he was supposed to. So if he participated in practice yesterday, he should be able to play tonight. So Austin Rivers back will definitely help the team. All right, guys. This is a good episode. We'll be back tomorrow breaking down the Orlando game, talking some more trade stuff, getting ready for the Lakers game on Saturday. Clippers are going to try to get some revenge for their Christmas loss. This is Lucas Hand signing off for Locked On Clippers.
A lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.